Why is that a surprise?
Your temper doesn't always mix with competitive sports.
I have a temper?
You got some knowledge showing your mug here, you big green dope! This is the end of the world! Yeah!
The Thing?
The Thing.
Fighting the Hulk?
Yeah, it's as bad as you think.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Stop it!
Genesis!
What's in the box?
Disenfranchised by the modern comics industry, producer Paul Spataro, Dr. Bill Robinson, and Scott H. Gardner now
ply the time stream in a never-ending quest to rediscover and reconnect with that unique brand of fun and excitement that can only truly be found in good old-fashioned, randomly selected comic book back issues. Journey with them now. Back to the bins.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go! I got nothing else.
What is he saying?
He's running a Skype update. Every time.
Every freaking time. He's got a... Does he have a 386? Is that what he's doing it on?
I think he's got what did they used to have, the Univac, back in like the '60s.
Maybe if he changed the tubes.
Maybe he has a Commodore 64.
Hold on, I got to crank it up. 1 second. Maybe if he gave the mouse that's running in the wheel a couple of more pieces of cheese. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Is the 386 computer updated?
You know, here's the thing, Scott. We review vintage comics. We're not supposed to review them on a vintage computer.
Yeah, apparently it's time for me to upgrade or something. I don't know.
Is that the computer they use to work on the calculations for the A-bomb?
It's got its own room with air conditioning. Just... It's got the what you call it, the spool tapes going.
Yeah, it looks like in Wonder Woman when they were going to the computer room.
are you guys Bluto guys or Brutus guys? Because I was never a Bluto. Brutus guy.
Bluto.
I was thinking there was one episode. I can't remember all the details, but it was I think it was supposed to be like they were younger, and they were both trying to woo Olive Oil, and Bluto, like. Did something to screw Popeye up, and then Olive Oil hated him because of that. And then a frog actually was saying, Bluto did it. No, no, why? That's in my head.
Did they have like big puffy hair since it was supposed to be a long time ago? Popeye's got a coif.
I don't, it's a very, very vague memory, to be honest with you. So I could be totally misstating how it occurred.
That does sound familiar, though.
Well, look what I added to the collection. Hold on.
Oh.
Ooh.
It's Jay Garrick.
Justice League Unlimited Jay Garrick.
That's cool. That is cool.
I don't know if you're worthy of that.
Why?
Because
I actually have a helmet here. I have a very similar helmet to that, so I think I am.
That is true, of. You do.
I got a kick out of that thing I sent to the group. If the Marvel Universe took place in the 70s.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday, and that was great. I'm glad you shared it.
I think Burt Reynolds could have pulled off an amusing Tony Stark.
He definitely could have.
I showed my wife. She was like Clint Eastwood as Nick Fury.
That's a great shot. Too.
Dead on for her.
All right, here. Popeye the Sailor Man, out to punch.
How are we covering this book? Because you didn't say whether you needed anybody to write anything up or anything.
I needed you to write it up.
Well, you didn't write it up ahead of time, so
did you? Well, it's just you could do it off the cuff. Go.
Is this what you guys normally cover? Like, this is your thing?
Yeah, this has been our thing for about 3 years now. Yeah. But you're welcome to it. You're welcome to join us in our thing. So, hello everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am here with Popeye and Bluto. Oh, no, I'm here with Dave and Scott. That makes you Bluto, Scott.
Oh, good Lord.
I mean, you know what I mean.
Very good. So, well, you know, Popeye and Bluto, they're always throwing punches, and so are the Thing and the Hulk. So it's a good transition. We are here to pick up on our, I don't remember, it's been a while since we did our last Thing Hulk issue.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, for anybody who's...
I thought this was Legends. You mean I wandered into the wrong set?
Well, it is. It's Legends of the Thing and the Hulk.
Oh, were they with the Justice Society in a crossover that I missed?
They're Scott's favorite Justice Society members, along with D-Man. So, if you guys are reading along, we're doing the first story in Incredible Hulk Annual number 18, and the entire issue of Fantastic Four number 374 today. So if you haven't picked them up and you want to, or you have Marvel Unlimited or anything of that nature, we'll wait. Just pause us and we'll wait, and you can come back and we'll discuss them. Okay, you done? Well, then here we go. Scott, give us the synopsis of the Hulk.
Oh, good Lord.
All right. So let's see. The release date on this is March 31st of 1992. The cover date is July of 1992. We're only doing the first story, which is called Mano a Mano. It's written by Peter David, penciled by Travis Charest. I'm not familiar with him. Inked by Dan Green, who I'm only vaguely familiar with. Colored by Christine Scheel, who I'm not familiar with. Lettered by Richard Starkings, who I only know as under the name Ringo Starr.
I was just going to say Ringo.
Edited by Bobby Chase, who was Mockingbird, right? So the synopsis is that the Hulk and Thing have agreed to meet at the Last Chance Bar for an arm wrestling competition to see who's stronger. The patrons begin making bets, and the two powerhouses talk tough. Everyone's unaware that an army of supervillains is aware of the meeting and have targeted the bar. Just as the pair begin their match, the Rhino, Blastar, the Absorbing Man, and Quasimodo come bursting in. They try to attack the two heroes, but the heroes pay the villains no mind. And as they struggle in their competition, knocking out anyone who gets in range of their grappling fists. Watching from a ship are Mentallo and the Fixer, who find the display completely embarrassing. They decide to take more drastic measures, and after the bar is evacuated, they drop a bomb on the two combatants. The entire area is decimated, yet the Thing and the Hulk aren't even fazed by the blast. However, the table and chairs that they're using to wrestle suddenly crumble, ending the match in a draw. Getting up off the ground, the pair agree to meet again next week. This would have been the perfect story in Not Brandeck. But this cannot be a real Marvel Universe story because it's just too silly and it diminishes the villains too much. So it's a fun read, but it's not. I can't actually have it be in continuity in my mind. What do you think?
Everyone got bombed.
I agree with you on that. I'm not sure what exactly they were. I think they were just going for something fun and lighthearted. I'm not sure it works. For me, it doesn't exactly work because this is one of those things where I have trouble turning off continuity brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing that occurs to me is that I think by this point, and Paul, you're the official scorekeeper on this, so you tell me if I'm way off, but I think we've pretty well established at this point that the Hulk is definitely stronger. So just I can
no price that, but go ahead.
I mean, so just the fact that they're sitting down to fight in this manner seems a little strange because the Hulk is stronger than the Thing. Unless the only thing I can think of is that because this is the Smart Hulk era, and he's not fueled by rage.
Exactly.
That maybe that brings them down to a comparable level. Is that where you were going?
Yes. The angrier Hulk gets, the stronger Hulk gets. So right. If he's just calmly sitting and having a friendly competition, he's not angry. And at rest, Hulk is probably at about the same strength as the Thing. But once he gets angry, then he could just crush the Thing.
Right.
So for that reason, I can accept the story. I just can't accept that the villains are killed so easily or beaten so easily. I can't accept that they're not even aware that the villains are there and they're defeating them. And, you know, it's just too silly. That's why, like I said, it's a perfect story for not Brand X, but it's not good in real continuity.
Right. Wow, I'm looking here at... Travis, what's his name? Charest? Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. The penciler's credits. On Mike's Amazing World, this is his first credit, is this story. Uh-huh. He does not have a huge body of work. Flash Annual number 5 is the next thing after this. He did a couple issues of Dark Star. He did a Flash story in Showcase 93. And then a whole bunch of stuff for Image with Wildcats, and that's about it, really. It's kind of, a few projects all over the place with DC, and then the rest with Image, and then the last, he's pretty consistent through the 90s, and then there's a big old gap. He did Wildcats number 6 in November of 1999, and then his very last credit is Ultimate Saga number 1 for Marvel in 2007, and that's it. So, yeah, not a big body of work. Yeah.
What do you think of the art?
I like it for the most part. I would say it's better than. It's better than 90s art from this, because this is 1992. I just suffered through. So because of the next book that we're going to talk about, I resumed last night my read through of Fantastic Four, which I kind of stalled out on only because the next thing I had to read, because I'm trying to be thorough in that read through, was a Fantastic Four annual. And oh my God, the art was horrible. 90s in the absolutely worst 90s way. And this is contemporary with that, yet I find this to be, for the most part, pretty good. And it's shocking to me that this is the guy's first credited story, at least according to Mike's Amazing World. And Mike's site is usually pretty thorough. He has a lot of different publishers on there now. So, I'm trusting the site that this is, his first or among his first. So coming right out of the gate with this, yeah, it looks pretty damn good. It's not perfect. It's not exactly my preferred style, but I mean, it's not hard to look at either. So yeah, it's pretty decent. It's really the story. It's not much of a story for one thing. I know this is just Peter David kind of clowning around as he does. And I tried to take it as that. It wasn't funny is the thing, And generally when Peter David does funny, it's usually really funny. I usually find it, very funny, like laugh out loud funny. This was just kind of like, okay, thanks for trying, but I didn't find it particularly funny or amusing. And I was a little perplexed by all the weirdness going on in the background. So on the second page of the story, it's page 4 as the pages are numbered. Next to last panel, why is that one tough in the bar? He's wearing like a Pippi Longstocking's wig or something, or I don't know if that's how his hair is cut or what is up with that.
I think that's supposed to be how his hair is cut, which is just weird.
Yeah,
it does look like a wig.
Yeah, it looks like he scalped a little girl and now is wearing her scalp. It's really weird looking. And then this happy thing is everywhere. Did you guys notice this? So when whoever the hell this is, because I couldn't quite figure out who all the villains were, but there's a villain that's using a chainsaw, or like a, not a chainsaw, it's like a table saw or whatever kind of saw this is on the thing.
Which page?
And it says, what's that?
Which page? I see it on page six.
Yeah.
That's Tyrannus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's using a saw. And there's a little smiley face on it, and it says, Happy Saw. And then further down the page, I think that's supposed to be the Absorbing Man, is using a jackhammer, and it says, Happy Jackhammer, with the same smiley face. And there's a cannon shooting at the Hulk.
Happy Cannon.
Is that what it says, cannon? I couldn't read that other word. And, yeah, this is through the entire story. It's like this is supposed to be like a brand name or something.
On page 7, I guess it is. It says Happy Evil Device.
Yeah. Yep.
That's the sponsor.
Yeah. I knew there was one more. I couldn't remember where it was. So yeah, it's. I don't get it. It's got to be some sort of a joke, or maybe it was an inside joke, or maybe it's a take on the Walmart logo, or I just didn't get the gag, but it's a little distracting because it's continually through the entire thing. So I don't know. This was kind of an odd one. This was an odd beast, this one. And
yeah, it absolutely was, no question.
And if this bomb was enough to level the whole place, how did the thing survive? I'm a little perplexed by the thing sometimes, because he's not like the Hulk. Like, he actually has to breathe, and like his internals are much more vulnerable to attack and gas and stuff like that. So how is he able to survive being bombed? I didn't quite get that, because I just don't see him as He's super strong, yes, and he's got this rock exterior, yes, but I didn't think he could survive something like this.
So he's more like a hoarder?
maybe. I don't know.
You have to give that one some thought.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, it definitely killed all the people who were in the bar.
I think this one requires you to kind of turn off your brain.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think that's what it's meant to do, frankly.
And yeah, Dave raises a good point. That's the other thing is, are we to assume that everybody else in the bar was killed, vaporized?
Not if you turn off your brain.
Yeah, I don't see this being a story that's that would be referenced or anything like that. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think it's a one and done. Like I said, it probably should have been a Not Brand X story. It should have been, you know, in something that was meant to not be taken seriously. Like it shouldn't have been presented as a real story.
Right. I mean, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's something like Superman teaming up with Santa Claus or something like that.
Right.
Along those lines.
Batman and the Easter Bunny together.
I'd be perfectly accepting of this story and everything that happens in it, I think, if all the villains were Morts. And I think they're kind of presented that way.
Oh, they're definitely presented that way.
But you know damn well that they're not going to kill off Rhino or the Mole Man. I mean, those are villains that people like that are going to reappear. So even if you take this story completely at face value at the end, like, oh, wow, everybody in the bar was nuked except these two. Yeah, no, I don't buy that, because I know damn well that we're going to see the Mole Man again. We're going to see Rhino again, and probably the Absorbing Man. These other guys, yeah, maybe not so much, but yeah, definitely those guys. So that automatically makes me kind of discount the story. Like, yeah, I know they're not dead. They're too popular to be dead. And they've been dead before, more than likely, and come back. So, yeah, it was okay.
Was this really what Metallo looked like in the 90s?
Mentallo? He's not Superman's villain.
That's what I meant.
Who is
Mentallo? Well, I think it might even be Mentallo. I don't even know how it's pronounced for sure. Yeah. But he eventually went on to be in the Thunderbolts with I don't remember what name he went under at that point, but then he became like an artificial life form.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't recognize him here. I don't. Yeah.
It looks like he's played by Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah. I thought that was somebody different, though. I thought his name was like the Fixer or the Wizard or some shit. Or is he one of those guys that's had like multiple identities or something?
Not that I'm aware of until we got to. Well, it is Mentallo and the Fixer. There's the two different guys, unless I'm mixing them up.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, let's see if we can.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at Mentallo's wiki right now to see what the deal is with him. Is he the guy that became?
I'll look up the Fixer, because this is riveting.
Yeah, it's Fixer. Fixer's the one I'm thinking of that went into the Thunderbolts. But
okay, so I got them mixed up.
Yeah, I don't know who this guy is, Mentallo.
Well, they were teammates, or you know, partners, whatever, you know, villainous partners. I think I'm pretty sure they were introduced in Strange Tales, you know, in a Nick Fury story.
Right. Right. Which is probably why I don't know who he is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see where Fixer's mentioned a lot in his biography here, but yeah, I don't recognize the guy. Okay. Interesting. So is this guy he's with, is that supposed to be? No, I don't think so, because he refers to him as young man, so I think he's just a lackey. But the Fixer's outfit did frequently look like that, I think, right? It was kind of a green jumpsuit type of thing, right?
I think. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I believe so.
Interesting. Yeah.
You get the, you know, people old enough to remember laughing and Artie Johnson used to say, very interesting, but stupid.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, you know what? Just to go back and revisit it for a moment, I thought the artwork in this was fairly good. There's points in it where it looks like it's a little bit rushed to me. But other than that, I thought it was pretty well done. So, you know, overall, I'm kind of okay with the artwork, and I'm a little surprised this guy didn't get a little bit more work to do. Right. But, you know, who knows? This may be, whatever this is, just, you know, a few-page story, and this may have taken him, you know, weeks to do. Maybe he couldn't make a living, you know, at the speed he would produce it. Who knows?
There's a couple of panels of the Hulk, to me, as, you know, not a Marvel guy, that I don't know, it seems like off-model, the look to his face, particularly on, there's no page numbers.
I think they had a tough time with the character model for the Hulk when they were doing the Intelligent Hulk, because they didn't want him to look as brutish, but they still wanted him to look recognizable as being the Hulk beyond just the green skin. So I think there was a lot of variation in how he was done as far as that goes.
Yeah, then that's got to be what it is. Because some panels he looks brutish, like I expect, and others not really.
Right. Yeah, honestly, the only thing in the art that I don't like actively dislike is there's a couple, and I think they're both on page 4 of the story. Especially like the, let's see, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 7th panel on page 7 where the thing is saying wise guy. He's got like monkey face or something. It just looks really weird. Like from the nose to the chin, he's got like a very ape-like face. And it's just like, that's not Ben Grimm. It just looks weird.
I've seen a few people who draw him where they make the space between the nose and the mouth too long.
Yeah.
Well, it's that panel next to it of the Hulk is the image I'm saying that looks off on the Hulk.
Yeah, he looks a little girly right there.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now you're going to make him angry. Then he's going to beat the thing.
You're a sissy. But yeah, no, I mean, otherwise, I do think it's good. I mean, it is really surprising that this is the guy's first published stuff because it looks pretty sharp for the most part.
I'm pretty happy with the artwork. I think the story is, you know, it's lighthearted, supposed to be. It's a one joke, really, is what it comes down to. That's I think the reason you're not finding it funny is because it's whatever 5-6 pages of one joke,
right.
If they gave it a little bit more thought and put a little bit more intelligent humor in there, maybe in the conversation they're having while they're doing it, then it would have been more entertaining. But it again, to me, the whole thing about it is that you just can't view this as being in continuity, not because the two of them wouldn't meet and have an arm wrestling contest for fun when the Hulk was intelligent, but because the villains are so easily dispatched that it's just stupid.
Right.
Well, you can't take them serious.
They're ignored.
Yeah, but I mean, they knock out the Rhino and Quasimodo, and Tyrannus and the Mole Man. I mean, Tyrannus and the Mole Man. Yeah, you could knock them out easily, but Quasimodo and the Rhino, you wouldn't knock out that easily.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd go toe to toe with you.
Yeah, I mean, didn't he spend the stupid? Rage Hulk, didn't he spend an entire issue trying to fight the Rhino way back in the day?
Several times.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with Blastar. He's too powerful to be dispatched that way.
Right.
So, you got to just take it as this is, not this is an imaginary story as opposed to all the real ones. That's all. But as far as that goes, I'll just say quickly, I guess, I think the artwork is pretty good, probably a B-. And the story is just, it's a one-joke story that's very silly, but if you take it as not in continuity, it's probably a C. And the cover has nothing to do with the story, so I'm not going to rate that.
Right. Cool.
You have anything with the ratings?
Yeah, I'll do ratings, I guess. Artwork on this. I will say a B- on the artwork. I think it's pretty good. I think with some refinement and everything, this guy could have really been something. I'd be curious to see his action stuff. Because there's sort of action when the bad guys are attacking the heroes, but of course the heroes aren't doing anything. They're locked in their arm wrestling, so we don't actually really like see a fight type of thing. So I'd be very curious what this guy's action sequences would look like. But I like his staging and that sort of thing. I really like the shot of the close-ups of the Hulk's eye and the Thing's eye when they're starting their match and everything. So I mean, he's got, he's got some interesting angles and that sort of thing. So yeah, I'd like to see more of this. It's kind of a shame that he didn't stick around with Marvel for much. Story, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to give the story a D-. I really thought it was just, it was a waste of time more than anything else. I get what I think he was going for. It just didn't work for me. So yeah, I didn't think much of the story. So overall grade between the two, C minus, which is sad because I think the art's pretty darn good. It's just it's nothing that you need to waste your time seeking out or anything like that. As a matter of fact, if you did, I'm pretty sure this annual is pretty easily found in the 50 cent to a dollar bins on a pretty regular basis. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the art was all right. I gave the art a little less than you guys. I gave it a C. The story, for me, it's a gag story. It's average. I give it a C, too, so... Straight C's across the board.
Cool.
All right. So moving from the extremely silly story. Now, just to defend the story the slightest bit, you know, this is the first story in the annual, and then there is a much more lengthy story that's part of a, there's several issues in I think it was in Doctor Strange's annual and the Submariner's annual and possibly Silver Surfer's as well, where it had like a Defenders storyline going on.
Right.
So this is, you know, this isn't the whole thing, what we read here. Anyway, the next one we're covering is Fantastic Four number 374, which has a cover date of a release date of January 27th, 1993, and a cover date of March of 1993. The story is titled Suddenly, The Secret Defenders, written by Tom DeFalco, penciled by Paul Ryan, inked by Danny Bulinati, colored by Gina Going, and lettered by Jack Morelli. The cover shows Wolverine, Ghost Rider, the Hulk, and Spider-Man on the left coming towards the center. On the right, coming towards the center, are Mr. Fantastic, the Thing, the Invisible Woman, and the Human Torch. And then in between them, there's the, I guess, astral image, ghostly image of a very large Doctor Strange. And it says, the new Fantastic Four versus the Fantastic Four. Suddenly, the Secret Defenders, which is the title of our story. With the Human Torch on the run from the law with a bounty on his head, his friend Spider-Man has decided to try to gather some other heroes to help him track down the Torch and convince him to surrender to the authorities. Spider-Man finds himself at the Sanctum Sanctorum of Doctor Strange to help gather some allies. He interrupts Strange while doing a mystical tarot card reading, which warns of death and doom. However, he cannot say with any certainty what the cards truly mean. So it really makes it very useful that he's doing that. Spider-Man then asks Doctor Strange to use his mystical abilities to gather his old allies in the new Fantastic Four. Agreeing to help, Doctor Strange sends out his spirit form out into the world and contacts the Wolverine in Westchester, the Hulk in Reno, the Ghost Rider in Cypress Hills. All three agree to join up to help Spider-Man hunt down the Torch. Meanwhile, Reed, Ben, and have just returned to Four Freedoms Plaza. There, Reed is upset to learn that Johnny had accidentally set fire to Empire State University and is now on the run from the law, and that the repairs to their headquarters have been halted due to Sue arranging a financial payout to ESU to make them drop their case against her brother. Sue suddenly snaps at Reed, asking him if he thinks that this is her fault. She tells him how Johnny was defending himself against Pybok, Lija, and Devos when the fire happened. As Reed and Sue's argument continues on, Sharon asks Ben if they could speak privately, and they both leave the room. Reed very clearly points out how stupid Sue's outfit is. In another part of the building, young Franklin is with his caretaker, Agatha Harkness. Hearing his parents arguing again, Franklin becomes upset, and his powers begin to flare up. Thinking quick, Agatha casts a spell to cause the boy to fall asleep, ending his threat. Although Harkness fears that the boy may become a danger in the future. At that moment, in Latveria, Castle Doom glows with fierce energies amid the frightened villages of Doomstadt. Inside, Dr. Doom is transferring the power he stole from Aaron the Rogue Watcher into a battery pack, which he will use to channel the power. with his technicians finished with a new suit of armor that will allow him to contain these energies, Doom sends them away. He then has his servo guards strip him of his traditional armor and place on his new suit so that Doom can wield the power of a watcher. Back in New York City, Reed, Sue, Ben, and Sharon have taken out the Fantasticar in order to split up and search for Johnny in the city. From an abandoned building, Johnny spots Reed out searching for him. Ashamed of everything that has happened, Johnny doesn't call up, but slinks back into the gloom of the abandoned tenement. Elsewhere in the city, the Secret Defenders are out looking for Johnny as well. When the Hulk talks about harming Johnny, Spider-Man reminds him that they aren't out to hurt the Torch, only to convince him to surrender to the authorities. Johnny is also being watched from Earth's orbit by Paybok, Devos, and Lija. As Paybok gloats over the impending defeat of the Torch, Lija feels a pang, leaving to wonder if she can kill her one-time husband and father of her child. Johnny is suddenly found by the Secret Defenders, and with no choice, he fires a Fantastiflare into the sky, alerting the others of the location. The Torch then flames on and fights against his pursuers while Reed and the others arrive at the scene. While Wolverine fights Mr. Fantastic, the Ghost Rider squares off against the Invisible Woman as Ms. Marvel squares off against Spider-Man. Johnny tries to pit his flame against the Ghost Riders. Meanwhile, the Thing battles the Hulk. The Hulk manages to knock the Thing through the floor, then pulls Reed off of Wolverine. As the battle on Earth rages on the moon, the Inhuman royal family spots a strange flare of energy fly past their kingdom towards the Watcher's Citadel, prompting Black Bolt to investigate. At the Watcher's home, Uatu has placed the unconscious Aaron in a stasis chamber. Suddenly, he is interrupted by the arrival of Dr. Doom, who announces that he has come to take all the power within the Citadel. Back on Earth, the fight between the Fantastic Four and the Secret Defenders rages on. During the battle, Wolverine gets worked into a berserker frenzy and tries to attack Sue. Although she is protected by her force field, the Thing pulls the mutant off his teammate. This proves to be an error as the feral Wolverine slashes Ben's face with his adamantium claws during the struggle. Seriously cut, the Thing lashes out, striking Wolverine as hard as he can, sending the mutant flying through the rotted walls of the building. While everyone is concerned over Ben's injury, the Ghost Rider tries to restrain Johnny with his chain. However, the Ghost Rider is interrupted by the sudden arrival of Lija, who has come to defend her husband. Seeing this from the monitor in space, Paybok is furious that Lija has now betrayed him, unaware that Paybok plots to do the same thing as well. While on Earth, the Fantastic Four, Lija, and Ms. Marvel are surrounded by the Secret Defenders. Before the fight can continue, the Fantastic Four and their allies are suddenly teleported away. Witnessing this, Doctor Strange points out that the Fantastic Four seem as surprised as they were about the sudden teleportation and fears that this may be the last we ever see of the group.
You want to take a drink?
I'm going to go take a nap. So, you know, I'm going to cut right to the chase here, because the whole purpose of these episodes, and we'll talk about the issue more at length, obviously, as we go on, but the whole purpose is to examine the battles between the Thing and the Hulk. And we didn't really declare a winner in the first one because there was no winner. They didn't, you know, nobody got in any shots on each other. But in this one, the really only significant blows were landed by the Hulk. So there's no question in my mind that he won the battle, this issue.
Well, the Thing does draw first blood, so to speak. I mean, not that I think he bloodies the Hulk, but I mean, he throws the first punch. But you're right. Everything else, it looks like the Hulk pretty clearly has the upper hand here. And, you know, when he literally bonks the Thing on the head and sends him, you know, plummeting through this, you know, all this, the floors of the building that they're in. Yeah, that to me, that's, he's pretty clear the winner in that portion.
Not only does he bonk him on the head and, you know, and win that way, but he does so right after taking a shot to the stomach that didn't faze him in the slightest.
Right. Right.
So he took the shot from the Thing, didn't matter. And then he just, it's like, I'll see your shot to the stomach and I'll raise you a bonk on the head. This was a pretty cool time in the Fantastic Four, I thought.
Yep.
You know, they did some good stuff that I was really enjoying reading these when they were coming out. This is kind of, you know, when I first came back into collecting comics, and, you know, there was a whole thing that builds off this not too long after this, where they think that Reed is dead, and they go through a whole series of issues in that storyline, and because of the thing having his face slashed by Wolverine, and I'm not sure what he's supposed to look like, you know, that it's so bad, but he starts wearing like a metal mask over his face to cover up the scarring, and I gotta no prize that away a little bit, saying that it's not being done just because he's embarrassed of the scarring, but because he's got an open wound that would make him more susceptible to injury if they're battling somebody.
Right.
That's kind of what I justify it in my mind, because otherwise it doesn't seem right.
You could have fixed it with a little cement like Dr. McCoy did.
little spackle.
A little spackle, that's it.
I have to agree with you that this was a very exciting time for the Fantastic Four. I don't remember exactly what issue I came back in on, but there was such hubbub about Johnny that, you know, this just a couple issues before this where Johnny set fire to ESU. That was kind of at the time, that was kind of a major event for Marvel. And there was a lot of press. There was a lot of talk about it and everything. And suddenly the Fantastic Four was a hot book again. And I jumped in sometime like right at, because I remember for a time, the actual issue where Johnny did that, the one with the embossed cover, became a hard to find and expensive back issue. I didn't gain that one for a long time. So I think I came in like right at the next issue or something like that. But anyway, I actually bought this issue off the stands and loved it, and I still love it now. I think this is a great issue. There's so much stuff happening in this, and DeFalco really shows why I think he's a fantastic comics writer, because he's juggling so much stuff that's going on right now. Because, I mean, there was a lot of drama going on with the Fantastic Four during this time, because you had the whole thing with Sue's, you know, she's having a problem. She's been merged with the Malice personality, and it's changed her personality, and it's made her much more aggressive and bitchy, frankly. And so she and Reed are butting heads. You've got the whole thing with Sharon and the Thing trying to figure out their dynamic and their relationship. And it's just been revealed that she was cured of being the She-Thing by Dr. Doom, and that's just come to light. So now the Thing is very standoffish with her. You've got the whole thing with Franklin's powers, and, you know, reemerging and everything from the mental blocks that have been put on him. You've got this thing with Doom. And by the way, I friggin' love this armor for Doom. I wish this had stuck around. I remember thinking at the time that this was great, because this armor looks like a nice bridge between his traditional armor and his Doom 2099 armor in the 2099 series. Unfortunately, spoilers, this armor doesn't last very long, and he does go back to the classic one shortly after this, which is a shame, because I think this is really awesome, you know, a very cool look for him. You've got the whole thing with Johnny, you know, being on the run and being hunted by the cops for what he did to ESU. Plus, Lige's just been revealed to be alive. So you've got that whole dynamic. So there's so much shit going on in this title. And DeFalco just does a brilliant job of juggling all this, not to mention, you know, juggling even more characters that are thrown in with this particular issue with the new Fantastic Four and the Inhumans and just everything that's going on. He just does a great job with this. And I fell in love with this all over again, reading it again. And it reminded me that, oh yeah, by the way, stupid, you're doing a read through of this title. So as soon as I was done reading this issue, I looked to see where I had left off, and I had left off just a few issues past this. So I reread the issues in between to kind of refamiliarize myself, like what was happening. And then sat down last night and read like the next dozen issues after that. So yeah, I got sucked right back in again. This is a great era of the FF, and I loved it. But I really, this issue in particular, I really like for one of the developments, which is where Wolverine slashes the Thing's face. That was a big thing at the time. I mean, that was a big development that was talked about in the, you know, the trades and all that sort of thing at the time. I remember that being, you know, like what's going to happen. And I think that's one of the things that makes me really like and respect DeFalco, is that he's one of those guys, much like Roger Stern, I always thought was really good at this too, that was a real master of that whole illusion of change thing, you know, because you can only do so much with these characters, because you can't really kill them. You know that they're always going to make it through, and eventually you've got to kind of, when you play with them, you've got to kind of put them back in the box that the next guy that comes along has the same basic thing to play with, you know, that sort of thing. So everything with these characters is sort of an illusion of change, but you can't really change them too much. And I think he's doing a really good job of that with this title, making it feel like big things are happening and big developments, but ultimately it doesn't really go anywhere big. I mean, nothing major really does end up changing. And that's got to be a really tough thing to pull off successfully. And I think he does a great job of it, because at the time it felt like, man, this is the title to be reading. Like, there's big shit going on in this. And honestly, is there really? Not really, but it feels that way. He just does a really good job of that illusion of change thing. And I you know, my hat's off to him. But
he did do a good job of the change, and there was enough change that went on for a little while. I'm going to agree with you and disagree slightly, because I do think, you know, I do agree with you that he totally put the toys back in the box so that you could go back to the status quo at the end. But while he was doing this, he gave the Thing the scars on his face that he had to deal with for quite some time. It's not like, you know, it was a two-issue thing and it turned around. Then at least, you know, he in air quotes, he killed off Reed Richards for a while and had them wander leaderlessly, or with Sue as their leader, effectively, you know, until they were able to recover Reed. And the death scene, while it wasn't overplayed, it was well done, because it was similar in a lot of respects to what they did with Vindicator in Alpha Flight, where yeah, you know, it appeared that he was disintegrated. Meanwhile, he was moved off to another parallel area, you know, whatever. But, you know, and when he came back, he had the, you know, he had been living off the land with a full beard and all of that stuff. But it was cool. It was well done. It was fun to read. And they did a lot of revisiting storylines that had gone in the past, if I'm remembering right. You know, there was a whole series of issues that was, you know, new stories, but paying homage to the old stories, and just really, really well done. I'm agreeing with you, but I'm thinking he did change it enough to make it intriguing. So I'm totally on board.
Yeah. That's where I made it to last night while I was reading was, I forget the issue number. I can tell you here in a second, but it was the issue where Reed is quote unquote killed, and it's 381. That was excellent, because Doom has this great death scene, essentially. Like, Doom is mortally wounded, and as he's dying, reaches out to Reed. And Reed, thinking, you know, that he's assist, you know, he's going to help Doom, reaches out, takes his hand, you know, to assist Doom with his dying wish. But Doom's dying wish is to destroy Richards. So he disintegrates him, and it's like, holy shit! I mean, it was cool. It was very cool.
Good deed goes unpunished.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's really good stuff. Yeah, DeFalco, I, you know, between this and his Thor stuff, he's, I still feel like he's very underrated. And I, between those two runs alone, I think deserve, you know, he deserves a much, he deserves much more praise and much more recognition than I feel like the guy gets. Honestly. He's one of those writers where one of these days I would like to sit down and do like a read through of like everything that he's done, just because I don't think I've ever read anything from him that I haven't liked.
I'm not sure. I seem to remember him possibly for, you know, due to an editorial mandate, but I seem to remember him having a little bit much to do with the Clone Saga in Spider-Man. So I'm not sure I'm going to say that he can do no harm.
See, I liked that, but that's not, you know, that's with the caveat that, yeah, it had some major problems, but I read that much, much later down the road after all the hype and all the, you know, everything that came out of that. And for me, it was one of those, like, why is this so maligned and so hated and everything? But
it was maligned and hated because they went to the well too deeply. They put too much, it was, you know, similar to what they did in DC with the death of Superman and the Nightfall with Batman, that they just had to make it so epic that it has to be across, you know, 50 issues. It's like, you know, now you're pushing it too far because you don't have a 50-issue story here. You know, right. you have a 25-issue story that you're dragging out to 50 issues, right. and that doesn't work. So, you know, and I'm probably unfairly maligning DC's thing because I thought they did it more effectively than Marvel did in the Clone Saga. But I think the Clone Saga really just tried to milk it too much. And again, maybe DeFalco had something to do with those decisions. Maybe he didn't. But I do seem to remember his name coming up when that was all discussed, and not in a positive way.
Right.
But all that said, we're not reviewing the Clone Saga right now. We're reviewing this issue of the Fantastic Four, and we've expanded it a little bit to this run of the Fantastic Four, which we are in agreement is excellent.
Yeah.
And I think I'm due to do a reread of this particular run, which, how often do I say that now? We read a book and I'm like, oh, I got to read the rest of these. And then, you know, then a moth goes by and I'm distracted and it doesn't happen.
Oh, look, it's shiny.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, pretty.
That's the thing. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're right, because I don't know anything about this. I've never read any of these books. I'm not even familiar with the look of these characters. And reading this book, this was a great story.
Yeah, oh, it was definitely very easy to jump on at this point. And there's a lot that it's building on, too, with this whole burning of the Empire State University and all, but there's just enough exposition where it doesn't weigh it down, but it gives you enough to feel comfortable reading it.
Yep.
So it's, you know, another point to give it a thumbs up on is that it does give you enough information that if this was the first issue you picked up, you're good. If it's not the first issue you picked up, you're still good.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
No, but the Hulk wins the battle.
I agree.
I always find myself rooting for the Thing because I'm rooting kind of, I'm seeing him as the underdog in these fights.
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, you got to call it the way you see it. Oh, I'm gonna say, you know what? I really think I'm gonna say A's all around in this story. I mm-hmm. like the artwork. I love the cover. I love the story. My biggest complaint is that I don't like Sue dressing like a slut. Now I understand. I understand it. You know, figures into this whole Malice thing, but there is nothing about her outfit that makes sense. There's nothing where you say, "Oh, that's a better outfit to fight in." There's nothing that's protecting her. There's nothing that's going to.
It's a distraction.
Yeah, that's I guess you know, she's hoping that if she's fighting some guy, he'll be salivating instead of fighting her. I mean it's so poorly designed. I mean, you know, I know in the 90s they were trying to go for the, you know, the sexy look, but even her four on her chest is a cutout.
Right.
So that she could have more cleavage showing, because there's just not quite enough skin showing on this outfit.
See, I will defend it only in the aspect of I don't think it's a great outfit, but I don't think it's meant to be. I think it actually is meant to be exactly what it is, which is a take on the era. Malice, exactly. It's to show that she's had a personality change and she's a little whatever, sluttier or whatever, because of the Malice thing and all. So I think it's a personification of that, but it's not meant for you to look at it and go, oh, that, I like that outfit much better than the one that she was. I think you're meant to look at it and go, what the hell is she wearing? And for that, it serves its purpose. I think.
I do like that Reed calls her out saying, you know, what were you doing besides running around half naked in that ridiculous new costume?
Right.
And so her response is, that's not what you said when I took it out the first time.
That's not, you know, the people don't mind seeing their wives like that. They don't want other people to see their wives like
right.
that.
Right. Right.
You know, there's a time and a place. That's all.
Well, Reed shouldn't really talk with the Marty McFly vest he's sporting with his costume, though.
Oh, that was the 90s thing with the vests. So they were pretty ridiculous, frankly.
You know, if you look at the cover quickly, Adam Strange, not Adam Strange. See, I keep shifting over to DC. Doctor Strange looks like he's got the bat symbol on his chest.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Yeah, he does.
I'm Batman.
That's funny. Yeah, he totally does.
I'm just going back to the whole vest thing. At least that could serve a function, because, you know, you could have the pouches and pockets where you could be keeping things that will help you in battle. You know, it's your bat utility belt.
Like his car keys. Like Dr. Yeah. Fate. We learned Dr. Fate apparently carries his car keys in his pocket.
Well, my grades on this, I think I'm going to go a straight up A on the cover. I think it's a fantastic cover. Really, my only quibble with it is the thing of Doctor Strange in the background. It looks a little odd. I think it's just because of the use of the red ink and all that. It's a little distracting. It kind of, I don't know, it kind of makes the cover look a little bit too busy. This is an example where, or a case rather, where I think maybe just negative space might have actually worked better. So you're concentrating on the new FF versus the old FF without the distraction of you know, the thing with Strange in the background. I'm not sure. But otherwise, I really like it because I like how the figures in the foreground look. They all look fantastic, and they're all on model and everything. Plus, I kind of see this as a callback to there was an old issue of the FF where, who was it? Was it the?
It was Thor, Daredevil,
and
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, yeah, like from this.
Human Torch, the thing, and Reed.
Yeah,
like in the 70s.
Yeah.
Had a stark white background, so I kind of like the Doctor Strange in the background because it gives you a little something more going on.
Interior art on this, I'm going to give it a straight up A+. I don't see a single panel or page I don't like in this. I think it's fantastic. I think that I always have liked Paul Ryan. I like that he's doing kind of a Byrne riff, but by this point he has also developed his own style. And his style is fantastic. He's very detailed. I love that he does full backgrounds. He throws a lot of detail into everything. The guy is not slacking. And I think Bolognati makes a wonderful inker for him. So, yeah, this art team is fantastic. And I enjoyed everything that they did. And by this point, they've really refined their styles. And they're firing on all cylinders. I think the art is beautiful in this. I really, really enjoy it. And then the story, honestly, I think I'm going to give the story a straight up A+2. I enjoyed the hell out of it. There's not anything going on here that I don't think furthers the story. You know, it all functions together. And I think that, like I said in the beginning, I think DeFalco is doing a wonderful job of juggling a lot of characters, a lot of subplots, and a lot of developments, and keeping everything moving and exciting and fresh, and making me not only turn pages, but just want to keep reading. Just get the next issue. And yeah, this is great stuff. This is a fantastic era of the Fantastic Four. This is right up there on par with the Byrne era. I mean, this is the best the book has been since Byrne. And that's pretty high praise, you know, in my opinion. So, yeah, I love this. Overall grade for the book, I'm going to give the book itself a straight up A+. I think this is top-notch comics. It's good stuff. I enjoyed it.
I'll go quick. I'm right there with you. A+ across the board.
Cool.
Well, I think I gave it A's across the board, and I could quibble A+, but I'm going to say, even if it's A's across the board, overall, I'm giving it an A+.
Excellent. That's good stuff.
And what's next on our Thing Hulk agenda?
I think... Hang on just a second here. I'm sorry. I should have had this pulled up already. I think it's an Unlimited story, if I'm not mistaken. But give me just a second here. Also, my list sometimes does not agree with your list, so we might have to compare the two.
It looks like it's Fantastic Four Unlimited number 4. Now, I don't know if that story is... I'm just trying to take a quick look to see if it's enough to do an episode on or if we need to add the next thing on it. I'll have to open that up and take a quick look. But I'm glad we're moving along on this Thing Hulk retrospective. We're going to probably... Okay, I'm just looking at the cover of it. It's got the Thing and the Hulk on the cover, so it looks to me like it's a complete story and we can do an issue on it. Do an episode on it, rather.
Oh, this should be fun, because this looks like it might be the same team. Oh, shoot. I already deleted it off my iPad, so I'm not sure. But this looks like it might be the same team that just did the Fantastic Four annual that I was complaining about.
Okay, well, this one is written by Roy Thomas. It's penciled by Herb Trimpe. And I'm not going to give any more description other than to say this is not Herb Trimpe at his best. And I'll leave it at that until we get to this next time out.
Yeah. Because that FF annual story that I just read, and the story wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. But the art was just, it was painful to get through that book.
Well, that's always fun. But sometimes, you know, for whatever it's worth, sometimes it's more fun to review books that we don't like things in than it is to review the ones that we like everything in.
Right.
I still remember our review of, Combat Kelly, the last issue, and how much we hated that issue. And I had so much fun doing that review that I ended up putting that series on my want list. And we hated that issue. But anyway, I guess that's it for our Thing Hulk retrospective episode for today. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Dave, for joining the Thing Hulk team for at least one episode, hopefully more. And see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye. I love you.